Dear visitor, welcome to the Mother Church of Karini, dedicated to Mary Most Holy Assumed into Heaven. This guide was created by the Jonathan Livingston ODV Association with the patronage of the Municipality of Karini, thanks to funds from the National Recovery and Resilience Plan of the Ministry of Culture, included in Mission 1, Digitalization, Innovation, Competitiveness, Culture, and Tourism, and Component 3, Tourism and Culture 4.0. Before crossing the threshold of this sacred place, pause for a moment and let history envelop you. You are in front of a building that has its roots in the late 15th century, in an era of great transformations for Sicily and for the whole of Europe. It was 1492 when the construction of this church began, the same year that Christopher Columbus discovered America and the Catholic monarchs completed the Spanish Reconquista. A year of epical changes, which also marked the beginning of this extraordinary architectural and spiritual adventure. This magnificent church was commissioned by the noble La Grua Talamanca family, lords of Karini. It was not simply about building a place of worship, but about creating a symbol of their power, their devotion, and their indissoluble bond with the community. The construction was not quick. It took decades of incessant work, accurate planning, and the search for the best materials and the most skilled artisans. In 1523, 30 years after the start of the works, the church finally obtained recognition as a parish, consolidating its central role not only in the religious life, but also in the social and economic life of the village. During the 16th and 17th centuries, the church experienced a phase of continuous enrichment. These were the decades in which the first decorative cycles took shape, when artists like Vincenzo Blandino introduced that black and white Baroque style that gave the structure a first extraordinary elegance. But time and humidity, implacable enemies of art, soon began to threaten these early works, making restoration interventions necessary that would follow in subsequent centuries. The 18th century marked a true rebirth for the Mother Church. Under the enlightened guidance of Archpriest Carlo Ballerini, who led the parish from 1775 to 1798, a transformation project was launched that would make this church the masterpiece you can admire today. Ballerini did not act alone. He managed to involve the Prince of Karini, the ecclesiastical authorities, and the entire population to support the immense cost of restoration. The best artists of the time were called Giuseppe Testa, pupil of the great Vito Danna, Gregorio Lombardo, master of stuccos, and many other extraordinarily talented artisans. These men transformed the church into a theater of beauty, introducing neoclassical elements that harmonized perfectly with the pre-existing structures, creating that dialogue between different eras that still makes this place unique today. The 19th century brought new challenges, but also new opportunities. It was during this period that artists like Girolamo Bagnasco left their mark with wooden sculptures of rare beauty. But the true protagonist of the 19th century restoration was Monsignor Tommaso Manino, under whose guidance between 1927 and 1931, the artist Onofrio Tomaselli, together with his son Armando and other local painters, undertook a vast restoration project that restored the original brilliance to Testa's frescoes. Now that you know the history of this place, look up and let yourself be captivated by the magnificence of the facade that stands before you. It is a masterpiece of late Sicilian Baroque, a work that combines architectural grandeur with decorative refinement. Observe the general structure. Three large portals open like solemn invitations to enter the realm of the sacred. Each of these portals is surmounted by semicircular pediments, elegantly decorated with motifs that recall classical tradition reinterpreted according to Baroque taste. The two bell towers flanking the facade are asymmetrical. This is not a lack of design, but a conscious choice. One of these bell towers has been adapted into a clock tower, a detail that testifies how the church was not only a place of worship, but the beating heart of community life, the temporal reference point for the entire town. The clock tower, commonly called Il Tocco, the touch, has always been the meeting point for people who would arrange to meet there at a precise time corresponding to the striking of the hour. Now, move slightly to the right and head towards the charming three-arched loggia that opens on the right side of the church. This element, in addition to creating harmony in the architectural ensemble, offered shelter and shade on hotter days. But the true treasure of the side facade are the polychrome panels that adorn the wall immediately after the loggia. These vibrant panels, composed of 18th-century majolica, true gems of Sicilian ceramic art, are signed by Ignazio Milone and dated 1715, representing St. Vitus, the young martyr who is the patron saint of the city, St. Rosalia, the Palermitan saint so beloved throughout Sicily, here venerated as a protector from plagues and calamities. The Assumption, Mary ascending to heaven, the central theme of the dedication of this church. And finally, the Most Holy Crucifix, a representation of the passion and redemption of Christ. The colors are vibrant even after three centuries. The cobalt blue of the sky, the vermilion red of the cloaks, the gold of the halos, the green of the landscape backgrounds. These colors have not faded over time, thanks to the majolica manufacturing technique, an art that reached levels of absolute excellence in Sicily. Each panel was first modeled, then painted with mineral pigments, and finally fired at very high temperatures that fixed the colors forever. The result is what you see. These panels have not always been here. Originally, they completely covered the spire of the bell tower, creating a chromatic effect that must have been spectacular. But now, dear visitor, I invite you to cross the entrance threshold of this sacred place through the main entrance portal. Pause the audio guide and press play again as soon as you cross the entrance door. Welcome to the Mother Church of Carini. The first sensation that strikes you is that of being in a space that seems to expand infinitely. The very structure of the church follows the model of the Latin cross, a symbol of Christianity, but also an architectural form that guarantees a perfect balance between liturgical functionality and aesthetic beauty, before you opens the perspective leading to the main altar. But now, head towards the first chapel that opens on the left side aisle. I invite you to look up at the vault of this nave. What you see above you is a true painted sky, a masterpiece of sacred art that tells episodes from the New Testament related to Christ's public ministry. The barrel vault features five frescoed panels, each framed by white and gold stucco friezes with exquisitely crafted octagonal floral motifs. These frescoes are not arranged randomly, but follow a precise narrative sequence that advances longitudinally from the transept towards the counterfacade, accompanying the faithful on a path of faith and contemplation. The first fresco on the vault of the left nave that you can admire by looking up is a masterpiece of sacred art that tells one of the most touching episodes of Jesus' ministry, the healing of the paralytic. At the center of the scene, Christ stands in all his divine majesty, dressed in a white tunic symbolizing purity and a red cloak recalling the blood of redemption. His figure dominates the scene, and the gesture of his right hand, raised as a sign of command and blessing, still seems to echo the evangelical words, "Arise, take up your bed, and walk." Now turn your gaze towards the first chapel that opens to the left. This is the chapel of the Velatio Crucis, a space that preserves one of the oldest and most evocative liturgical traditions of the Catholic Church. The space is carved into the lateral wall thickness and opens onto the nave with a simple rectangular bay. At the center of the chapel, there is a modest wooden counter prepared for placing candles or flowers during Holy Week. This absence of an altar table emphasizes the primary function of the chapel. It is not a place for Eucharistic celebration, but for exposition and contemplation. But the true treasure of this chapel is the large veil that dominates the back wall. It is a canvas drape of considerable size, about 3 meters by 1.5, which represents one of the oldest liturgical traditions of Christianity, the Velatio Crucis. This veil, painted in monochrome brown tempera, is probably the work of Palermitan workshops, created between the late 19th and early 20th centuries. At the center stands the cross with the crucified Christ, represented with that dramatic intensity characteristic of Passion art. But it is not just a representation of the crucifixion. It is the anticipation of the Pietà, as indicated by the presence of the figures at the foot of the cross. At the foot of the cross, the sorrowful virgin, Mary, who experiences the supreme pain of a mother seeing her son die. Her figure, wrapped in a dark mantle, expresses all the pain of humanity in the face of the mystery of innocent suffering. Beside her, Mary Magdalene is depicted slumped in pain, in an attitude that expresses the despair of one who has lost everything that gave meaning to her existence. St. John the Evangelist, the beloved disciple, completes this group of figures representing the faithful humanity that does not abandon Christ even in the darkest hour. His presence recalls Jesus' words from the cross, "Behold your mother," words that entrust Mary to the church and the church to Mary. But what was the original function of this veil? During Lent, and particularly from Passion Friday until the Easter Vigil, this veil was lowered to cover the sacred images of the church. It was an ancient tradition whose purpose was to guide the faithful in meditation on the Passion of Christ, temporarily depriving them of the consolation of sacred images to focus their attention on the mystery of redemptive suffering. This chapel preserves the original use of this tradition, testifying to a liturgical practice that is little widespread today, but of great spiritual value. Continuing towards the second chapel, look up again at the vault of the left nave. The second fresco tells one of the most significant episodes of the Gospel, the calling of the first disciples. At the center of the composition, Christ stands with his divine majesty and the loving invitation addressed to those called to follow him. His outstretched hand does not command, but invites. His gaze does not judge, but welcomes. The protagonists of this scene are two fishermen brothers, probably Peter and Andrew, as the Gospel of Matthew recounts. One of the two brothers is bent over collecting nets, still immersed in daily work, but his body is already leaning towards Christ, as if he felt the divine call. The other brother, however, has looked up at Jesus, and in his expression you can read the assent of one who recognizes the voice of God in the voice that calls him. The setting for the scene is the coastal area of the Sea of Galilee, painted with that landscape mastery that characterizes all the decoration of this church. Continuing along the left nave, you are now in front of the second chapel, dedicated to Exi Homo. It has a sober but elegant architecture. It is a rectangular room covered by a plastered barrel vault, deliberately devoid of pictorial wall decorations. This choice is not accidental. The architectural sobriety concentrates all attention on the artistic and spiritual treasures that the chapel preserves. The altar that dominates the chapel is a masterpiece of neoclassical art, a work that combines purity of lines with richness of materials. Observe the front panel in antique green, a variety of marble with precious veins, framed by red marble from Castellammare. In the center, a golden heart immediately catches the eye. It is the symbol of Exi Homo, the heart of Christ. On the sides of the altar, two slender Ionic columns in red marble add a touch of classical elegance, echoed in the corner pieces of the elevation. But the true treasure of this chapel is found in the center, a small marble temple that is itself a work of art. Four white columns with golden capitals frame and protect the heart of the chapel, a wooden bust of Exi Homo. On the side walls of the chapel, two large 18th to 19th century canvases complete the iconographic program of this sacred space. On the left wall, a late Baroque Palermitan school canvas depicts an angel in flight offering the palm of martyrdom and a crown to a young soldier, St. Victorinus. On the right wall, another canvas depicts St. Blaise, the bishop with mitre and crozier who blesses. Beside him, a Franciscan friar and a veiled woman present their offerings. The crowning painting, dedicated to the deposition in the tomb, ideally closes the iconographic cycle of the chapel, leading the faithful from the derision of Exi Homo to the anticipation of the resurrection. Going further and looking towards the vault, the third fresco we encounter depicts one of the most tender and significant scenes of the Gospel. "Let the little children come to me." The scene takes place on the base of a staircase, an architectural detail that is not accidental but deeply symbolic. The staircase represents spiritual ascent, but here Christ descends to the little ones, lowers himself to their level, demonstrating that divine love meets their human fragility and simplicity. At the center of the scene, Jesus is depicted with his right hand raised in a gesture of blessing, his left gently caressing a child's head. The protagonists of this scene are three children, brought by a young mother and an elderly woman. Note how the artist was able to represent the different ages of human life: the innocence of children, the maternal care of the young woman, the wisdom of mature age in the elderly woman. It is all of humanity that presents itself to Christ, but through its purest and simplest members. The next chapel along the left nave is dedicated to Saint Peter, the fisherman of Galilee whom Christ chose as the cornerstone of his church. The statue is one of the most significant sculptural works in this church, carved in wood and attributed to the celebrated artist Girolamo Bagnasco in the 19th century. Saint Peter is represented in his apostolic dignity, but without losing that humanity that makes him so close to the hearts of the faithful. In his right hand, he holds the symbolic key, the attribute that immediately identifies him and recalls Christ's words, "I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven." Observe the extraordinary care with which the details of the drapery have been carved. The folds of the robe follow the movements of the body with a naturalism that makes the fabric seem real. The facial features are carved with a precision that reveals the artist's mastery. The beard, rendered with small curls. At the center of the composition, the encounter between human blindness and divine light unfolds. The blind beggar is depicted in a position that expresses his entire condition of need. He extends his staff towards Christ in a gesture that is both a request for help and an act of faith. The blind man is represented with a deliberately rougher body, his slender legs emphasizing his condition of physical weakness. The ash-blue color of his robe is not accidental. These colors evoke sadness, poverty. He is man reduced to the essential, stripped of everything but faith. Christ, on the other side of the scene, is represented with the compassionate majesty that characterizes all the frescoes of this vault. He bends towards the blind man, drawing near to his suffering. The painting technique used for this fresco reveals the hand of a master in the art of chiaroscuro. Observe how light seems to radiate from the figure of Christ, gradually illuminating the entire scene. Continuing our journey along the left nave, we reach the fourth chapel, dedicated to Saint Andrew, Peter's brother, the first called among the apostles, the one who first recognized Jesus as the Messiah. The statue before us is one of the oldest and most precious sculptural works in this church, an anonymous masterpiece from the 16th century that encapsulates centuries of devotion and art. This statue, though the work of an anonymous artist, carries within it all the expressive force and spiritual depth of the Italian Renaissance, an era in which sacred art reached heights of sublime beauty. Saint Andrew is represented with the diagonal cross, the attribute that immediately identifies him and recalls his martyrdom. The face of Saint Andrew expresses extraordinary emotional intensity. The artist succeeded in capturing not only the physical features of the saint, but his state of mind, that serenity born from the certainty of faith. The artist carved every fold with a mastery that makes the fabric seem real, moved by a light wind. The cross that Saint Andrew holds in his hands is represented as a symbol of glory. The diagonal cross, also called Saint Andrew's cross, becomes in his hands a banner of victory, a sign of triumph. The altar that houses the statue is a perfect example of Renaissance art. Above the altar, an elegantly decorated niche with gilded stuccos houses a fresco depicting scenes from the saint's martyrdom. Continuing your visit, look up for the last time towards the vault of the left nave. The fifth and last fresco in this sequence depicts one of the most beloved images in Christian tradition, the Good Shepherd. This fresco magnificently concludes the narrative cycle of the vault. Christ is represented wrapped in a purple cloak, a color that recalls his divine royalty, but also his redemptive passion. The small flock that Christ watches over is rendered with quick chiaroscuro touches that demonstrate the artist's mastery in capturing the essence of things with a few skillful strokes. The sheep are not described in minute detail, but their presence is evoked with a pictorial synthesis that makes them alive and real. But now I invite you to turn your gaze to the last chapel of the left nave, that of the Confessions, which houses one of the most precious artistic treasures of the entire Mother Church, the extraordinary canvas of the Adoration of the Shepherds by Alessandro Allori, a pupil of Bronzino, dated 1578. It is a masterpiece of the 16th century Florentine Renaissance that has found its definitive home here, in Sicily, continuing to enchant the faithful and visitors more than four centuries after its creation. Observe the composition carefully. Allori created a perfect balance between all the elements of the scene, where every figure, every detail, every play of light contributes to creating a sense of wonder and sacredness that will completely envelop you. The arrangement of the characters is not accidental, but follows a sacred geometry that guides the gaze towards the spiritual center of the composition. The shepherds are represented with expressions of sincere devotion. Allori succeeded in capturing not only the external appearance of these humble characters, but their state of mind, the astonishment of those witnessing a miracle. The shepherds' clothes are painted with extraordinary attention to detail and texture that demonstrates the artist's technical mastery. At the center of the composition, the infant Jesus radiates a divine light that illuminates the entire scene, emphasizing the spiritual meaning of the Nativity. The figure of the Madonna, represented by Allori, has the grace and sweetness that characterize the best Florentine pictorial tradition. Saint Joseph, often relegated to the background in representations of the Nativity, here takes on a prominent role. The background of the canvas is enriched with nuanced landscapes that add depth and realism to the composition. Allori uses the sfumato technique of Leonardo to create atmospheres that seem to dissolve into infinity. The contrast between the simplicity of the shepherds and the majesty of the miracle represented is one of the most touching elements of this canvas. The painting technique used by Allori reveals his training in Bronzino's workshop and his knowledge of the great Florentine tradition. The drawing is perfect. The colors are wisely distributed. Light is used as a narrative and symbolic element. It is a perfect example of that synthesis between beauty and spirituality that characterizes Renaissance art at its peak. But this chapel does not only house Allori's canvas. Here is also preserved a litter for the Blessed Sacrament, used for viaticum to the sick, a liturgical object that testifies to the pastoral care of the community for its most fragile members. Now head towards the left side transept where the Chapel of the Sacred Heart opens, once dedicated to Saint Sebastian. It is a deep rectangular space, raised on three red marble steps. Look up and admire the wall order that characterizes this space. Pairs of fluted columns with composite capitals support a continuous neoclassical entablature of rare elegance. The frieze running along the entablature, finely gilded, alternates rosettes, palmettes, and ribbon garlands that recur throughout the left transept, creating a decorative unity that testifies to the care with which every detail of this space was designed. The barrel vault, with lunettes, features gold-bordered panels filled with relief vegetal motifs. The central panel of the vault represents the flaming heart of Jesus, surrounded by angel heads, an image of extraordinary spiritual intensity. In the side sails of the vault, you can admire small putti with lilies, anchors, and crosses, an allusion to the theological virtues that prepare for devotion to the Sacred Heart. The lily symbolizes purity, the anchor represents hope, the cross recalls faith. At the center of the chapel stands the 19th century altar, made of polychrome marbles that create an effect of extraordinary chromatic richness. The Tempietto tabernacle that frames a mottled green dome with an apical cross is a small masterpiece of sacred art, a miniature architecture that recalls the great temples of antiquity. The wooden statue of the Sacred Heart from the late 19th century dominates the chapel with its majestic presence. Christ is depicted full figure, with a cream tunic and purple cloak, while pointing to his radiant and thorn-crowned heart. On the sides of the altar, two 18th-century canvases create an Easter diptych of extraordinary beauty and theological significance. On the left, the Noli Me Tangere depicts the risen Christ appearing to Mary Magdalene. On the right, The Ascent to Calvary presents Jesus being hoisted by soldiers towards the place of torment. This work, characterized by dramatic chiaroscuro contrasts and a theatrical late Baroque Sicilian style, exalts the dignity of Christ who freely accepts suffering for the love of humanity. The vault of the transverse arm features a central fresco of great spiritual significance: the angel comforting the prophet Elijah in the desert. This biblical episode is an allusion to the power of the Eucharist, to the spiritual nourishment that God offers to those who walk in the desert of life. Elijah, nourished by the angel, finds the strength to continue his journey towards the mountain of God. From this chapel, two very important accesses open: to the left into the oratory of the Blessed Sacrament, to the right into the sacristy. These spaces testify to the artistic and spiritual richness of this church, which is not limited to the main rooms but extends to every corner of the building. Now turn your attention to one of the most precious and refined treasures of the entire Mother Church, the marble tabernacle sculpted by Giacomo Gagini around 1543. This small Renaissance masterpiece, fixed to the pillar of the left triumphal arch, represents one of the most refined works in 1543 the entire church, and testifies to the presence in Sicily of that extraordinary family of sculptors who left indelible traces of Renaissance art on the island. It is a small wall ciborium carved into a marble shelf that seems to defy the laws of gravity in its elegant suspension. This shelf is not a simple support, but a decorative element of great refinement, made with a volute with a heraldic shield and garlands of roses in relief that testify to the prestigious commission of this work. The central body consists of an arched niche, a small temple that recalls classical architecture, but reinterpreted according to Renaissance sensibility. This niche is flanked by angelic caryatids that support the arch with grace and solemnity. In the lunette of the niche, you can admire a bas-relief of extraordinary finesse depicting Jesus rising from the tomb. The hemispherical coffered ceiling incised in the basin simulates a small Renaissance lacunar vault, a detail that transforms this small space into a true miniature temple. Every architectural element is reproduced on a reduced scale, but with the same care and precision that would characterize a large building. The proportions are perfect. The balance between the various elements is masterful. The use of Carrara marble testifies to the pursuit of the highest artistic quality. Immediately after the tabernacle, the Chapel of the Immaculate Conception, located in the left nave next to the presbytery. This sacred space represents one of the most intimate and secluded places in the entire church, a sanctuary dedicated to the Virgin Mary in her Immaculate Conception, where art, faith, and devotion merge in a harmony of rare beauty. At the center of the chapel stands the majestic statue of the Immaculate Conception, a work of art attributed to the celebrated Girolamo Bagnasco, the same artist who created the statue of St. Peter. The statue embodies the classical iconography of the Virgin. An ivory tunic envelops her figure with that purity that symbolizes original innocence, while a blue mantle drapes gracefully, wrapping the body in a spiral movement that seems animated by the breath of the Holy Spirit. The Virgin rests on a crescent moon and a globe, cosmic symbols that recall her universal royalty. Under her foot, the crushed serpent represents victory over original sin. It is the image of the new Eve who repairs the disobedience of the first woman. Beside the Virgin, a winged puto holds a bouquet of lilies, an emblem of purity and innocence. On the Virgin's head, a metal crown and a halo with the 12 stars of the Apocalypse proclaim her celestial royalty. The altar that houses the statue features a table in commesso marbles of white, black, and pink, a chromatic harmony that enhances its nobility. These colors are not accidental. White symbolizes the purity of the Immaculate Conception. Black recalls Mary's humility. Pink evokes her divine and human motherhood. The architectural layout of the chapel is revealed in a deep barrel-vaulted niche, culminating in a triumphal arch that marks its entrance. This arch, framed by smooth pilasters and an elegant molded cornice, emphasizes the noble simplicity of this space, where every element is designed not to distract from the contemplation of the Virgin. The vaults and walls, covered with a milky white plaster, are enlivened by a riot of gilded stucco reliefs, acanthus leaf motifs, rosettes, and tendrils gracefully intertwine, following the sinuous curve of the arch and drawing subtly projecting friezes on the side walls, creating a delicate arabesque of light and shadow. At the apex of the apsidal conch, just above the niche, a radiant sun stands out, a symbol of divine illumination. The monogram inscribed in a cartouche proclaims the Immaculate Conception as the dawn of salvation for humanity. To the left of the altar stands the funerary monument of Don Francesco Vecchi, a small marble edicule in pink breccia from Trapani, embellished with black marble inserts engraved with race maize. The base of the monument, supported by corbels, and the pilasters with lateral volutes, culminate in a broken pediment, giving the structure a sober and composed elegance. Within a white square frame, a painted roundel encloses the half-bust of the deceased, a bearded face, a dark clerical habit, and a severe pose that emphasizes spiritual authority. On the right of the main altar, St. Mark is presented with a mature face and curly hair, dressed in aquamarine green and a purple cloak. He reads a scroll spread on his knees, while behind him the head of a roaring lion emerges. The lion refers to the voice crying in the wilderness and is a symbol of the kingship of Christ who comes to establish the kingdom of God. On the left of the main altar, St. Luke appears as a bearded evangelist with a sugar paper blue tunic and a coral cloak. In his hand, he holds a quill and a sheet of paper. Behind him appears the muzzle of a bull with small horns pointing forward. The bull recalls the priestly sacrifice that opens the Gospel of Luke with Zechariah's offering in the temple. On the right of the central nave, St. John manifests as a youthful but bearded figure, wrapped in a large pink cloak. He holds a reed pen and an open book. Next to him, an eagle flies, resting a paw on the edge of the volume. The eagle alludes to the high theological vision of the Johannine prologue. In the beginning was the Word. Dear visitor, I now invite you to reach the presbytery of the Mother Church, the beating heart of this extraordinary church, the place where for centuries the mystery of the Eucharist has been celebrated. This space is raised by three steps, a detail that is not only functional, but deeply symbolic, emphasizing the sacredness and importance of this place. The presbytery concludes with a deep rectangular apse, which we call the choir, a space that was redesigned at the end of the 18th century following the canons of an austere Roman neoclassicism. Observe the walls, marked by false fluted pilasters, embellished with gilded Corinthian capitals that support a high entablature with dentils. The entablature, in turn, supports a broken pediment in whose vestigium a large axial window opens. The light filtering from this window is not accidental, but studied. It illuminates the altar and highlights the rich glory of God in stucco, an extraordinary work modeled in 1795 by the Palermitan stucco artist Gregorio Lombardo. Admire this glory of God. Figures of angels and cherubs dance in an explosion of divine light, while golden rays seem to radiate from infinity to bless this sacred place. Now, I invite you to observe the main altar created between 1798 and 1800. It is a magnificent complex of mixed marbles that testifies to the artistic and spiritual richness of this community. Corinthian columns of jasper and a Cipollino altar table enhance its preciousness and sacredness. The tabernacle, conceived as a small temple, houses a delicate ivory crucifix placed on a tortoise cross dating back to the early 19th century. Originally, this choir was surrounded by wooden stalls and a carved walnut pulpit, a work by Minucilla, unfortunately lost today. Of that magnificence, only the pulpit leaning against the north pillar remains, a silent witness to a past art that still speaks to us of the liturgical and artistic richness of this church in past centuries. But the true treasure of this presbytery are the canvases that adorn the choir walls, creating an iconographic path of extraordinary beauty that narrates salient episodes from the life of the Virgin Mary. At the center of the main altar, the large altarpiece of the Assumption of the Virgin dominates, approximately 6 meters by four, a work by Giuseppe Testa, dated 1795, as revealed by the signature discovered during the 2024 restoration. This discovery restored the work to its legitimate author after 230 years of erroneous attribution to Antonino Manno. In the painting, the Madonna ascends to heaven enveloped in a glory of angels, while below the apostles observe the empty tomb with expressions of wonder and amazement. The loose brushwork and the green-blue colors are typical of Testa, a pupil of the great Vito Diana, and testify to the continuity of the great Sicilian painting school. On the right wall, you can admire the Nativity of the Virgin, created by Antonino Manno with the collaboration of his brothers Vincenzo and Francesco between 1796 and 1798. The scene features matrons in the foreground, while Saint Anne lies in bed in the background. Note the sumptuous draperies and the warm light that envelop the composition, giving it an intimate and welcoming atmosphere that celebrates the joy of Mary's birth. Also on the right wall, at the height of the access arch, the Visitation of Mary to Elizabeth, also a work by Antonino Manno, part of the same Marian cycle. The artist focuses on the motions of the soul, representing pregnant Elizabeth and Mary bowing in greeting. An architectural backdrop enriches the composition, giving it depth and realism. On the left wall, The Marriage of the Virgin, a work by Antonino Manno, dated 1796 to 98, presents a pyramidal composition with the priest at the center celebrating the marriage between Mary and Joseph. Above, the dove of the Holy Spirit pours out a golden light, a symbol of divine blessing that sanctifies the sacrament and prepares Mary for her mission as Mother of God. Also on the left wall, at the height of the access arch, the vision of two holy monks, attributed to the late 18th century Sicilian workshop, with attribution to Angelieri, two religious figures point to the Madonna in glory, while below, vibrant musical angels animate the scene with their presence, creating a bridge between earth and heaven, between monastic contemplation and celestial glory. Now look up at the presbytery vault, where above the entablature two frescoed panels are located, also by Testa, now visible on the counter facade and on the triumphal arch. The first, above the altar painting, depicts the triumph of the cross. The cross, symbol of redemption, is carried to heaven by Putti and an allegorical female figure. The second fresco, towards the nave, represents the glory of Mary among angelic choirs. The assumed Virgin, almost continuing the painting below, is surrounded by angelic choirs in an explosion of light and movement that anticipates eternal beatitude. The flat vault connecting the two frescoes is divided by octagonal lacunars painted grotesque with gilded rosettes on an ivory background, restored in 1927 by Onofrio Tomaselli, who restored their original splendor. Dear visitor, I invite you now to continue your visit in the central nave, the fruit of Giuseppe Testa's genius. To him we owe the greatness of these works, permeated with unparalleled grace and expressive force. No less significant merit should be recognized to Onofrio Tomaselli, who, during his stay here in Carini, was able, in the restoration of Testa's frescoes, to restore that original hue that today allows us to admire them in their genuine and vibrant expressive force. Now look up. Five large frescoes adorn the vault of the central nave, unfolding like a painted sky that tells the deeds of the great biblical heroines. 10 frescoes, five on each side, unfold in the lunettes of the vault itself, inviting the gaze to get lost in the details and stories of holiness they narrate. In the five frescoes of the central vault, as many biblical events are narrated, featuring female figures of extraordinary strength and spiritual significance: Esther, Judith, Jael, Abigail, and Rachel. In the lunettes between the columns on the right side towards the main entrance door, proceeding longitudinally from the counter facade towards the main altar. The depictions follow as follows. In the first bay, we encounter Saint Jerome. In the second bay is dedicated to the Immaculate Conception. The third bay depicts Saint Joseph, husband of Mary, and putative father of Jesus. In the fourth bay, Saint Anne and the child Mary are depicted. In the last bay, Saint John the Baptist is depicted. On the opposite side of the nave to the left of the presbytery, the following are depicted in sequence. In the first bay, Saint Paul the Apostle. In the second bay, Saint Vitus the Martyr. In the third bay, Saint Catherine of Alexandria. In the fourth bay, Saint Sebastian. In the fifth bay, Saint Francis of Assisi. The first fresco of the central nave located in the center of the bay above the pulpit depicts Judith with the head of Holofernes. At the center of this scene of dramatic intensity, the young heroine Judith is seated in a pink robe that symbolizes both her femininity and her courage. She still holds the sword and places her hand on Holofernes' head in a gesture that expresses not violence but determination, not revenge but justice. The handmaid, kneeling beside Judith, exposes the severed head of the Assyrian general Holofernes in a gesture that is both triumph and warning. This gesture does not celebrate death, but the victory of justice. In the background of the scene, the pikes of the enemy camp can be seen, painted with the mastery that characterizes Testa's entire cycle. Leaning against the first column of the left nave, the pulpit, once an integral part of the large wooden machinery of the choir, unfolds in a lavish architecture of local walnut, darkened with a pad, embellished with gilded linden wood applications. The parapet, rectangular in plan with gently rounded corners, alternates mirrored panels framed by thin strips that accentuate its sober, neoclassical elegance. On it runs a continuous frieze of dentils and laurel leaves, supported by finely molded corbels. The canopy, guardian of a wooden sky, houses a radiant sun in the center from which hangs the candid dove of the Holy Spirit, a pledge of divine assistance to preaching. The rich relief decoration intertwines crossed draperies, tassels, and gilded festoons that, running in the splayings and in the arch of the parapet, echo the garlands of the Baroque altarpieces of the cathedral. On the front face, a gilded high relief of about 1.10 meters captures the eye. Christ stands out in a short tunic and cloak with his right arm raised in a gesture of blessing. His serene face gently bends towards the small audience that surrounds him. At his feet, the 12 apostles, minute faces, soft draperies gathered in a semicircular fan, guide the eye towards the master figure, composing a harmony that elevates the soul and fills with devotion those who contemplate it. Continuing your journey through Giuseppe Testa's masterpieces, look up again at the vault of the central nave to contemplate the second panel that tells the offering of Abigail to David, a biblical episode of extraordinary human and spiritual depth taken from the first book of Samuel. In the foreground, Abigail is shown kneeling in supplication. Her gesture of offering David a basket full of provisions is a sign of her wisdom and her ability to transform a conflict situation into a moment of peace and reconciliation. Behind her, you can see other handmaids and the loaded donkey, details that emphasize the abundance of the gift and the careful preparation of this encounter. David is depicted dressed as a commander with armor, feathered helmet, and cloak, symbols of his military authority and his future royal destiny. His gesture of welcome towards Abigail reveals the magnanimity of the future king of Israel. His ability to recognize wisdom, even when it comes from a woman, in an era when female voices were often ignored. Behind David, the warriors with spears and banners recall the punitive expedition that was about to fall on the house of Nabal, Abigail's husband. Continuing to contemplate Giuseppe Testa's masterpieces, now turn your attention to the third panel of the central vault, where one of the most dramatic and touching scenes of the Old Testament unfolds. Esther presenting herself to the Persian king Ahasuerus to intercede on behalf of her people. In the scene, the young queen faints on the steps of the throne, supported by her faithful handmaids, while the powerful sovereign bends towards her with a gesture of compassion and clemency. It is the classic iconography of the swoon of Esther, a moment that encapsulates all the human and spiritual drama of this extraordinary woman. Observe Esther, pale and slumped, a symbol of human fragility in the face of earthly power, but also of the inner strength that comes from faith. King Ahasuerus, moved by compassion, extends his scepter towards her in a gesture that transforms justice into mercy. The handmaids who support Esther testify to the fidelity of friendship and female solidarity. They do not abandon their queen in her moment of danger, but support her with their presence. The palace environment, with its majestic columns and theatrical draperies, emphasizes the solemnity of the moment. The large green drape that dominates the scene is not only a decorative element, but symbolic. It represents hope that never dies. Still later, admire the fourth panel of the central vault, where one of the sweetest and most significant scenes of the Old Testament unfolds, Rebecca at the well. This episode, taken from the Book of Genesis, places at the center of the composition the masonry well with bucket and rope. Rebecca is seated to the right of the scene, dressed in light colors with a bluish cloak that recalls the purity of her soul. The eloquent gesture of her hand pointing to the water is a symbol of her availability to the stranger. Abraham's servant, Eliezer, is depicted in the foreground on the left, with the typical traveler's attire and the turban cloak that emphasizes his foreign origin. His gesture of receiving the offering expresses recognition. In that generous young woman, he recognizes the bride destined by God for Isaac, the woman who will complete the promise made to Abraham. Testa was able to render the sweetness of this encounter with mastery. Concluding your contemplation of the great central frescoes of the vault, now turn your gaze to the fifth and last panel, located above the main portal, where Giuseppe Testa painted one of the most dramatic and controversial scenes of the Old Testament, Jael and Sisera. This fresco, which concludes the cycle of great biblical heroines, presents a story of cunning, courage, and divine justice. The scene opens with the figure of Jael, the young woman holding a hammer high, while in her lower hand, she holds the newly driven peg. These attributes, typical of Jael's iconography, immediately identify her as the wife of Heber the Kenite, the woman who, with a bold and decisive gesture, changed the course of her people's history. At Jael's feet lies Sisera, the Canaanite general, semi-naked and asleep, still bearing the marks of his warrior's armor. The contrast between his military power, symbolized by the armor and his vulnerability in sleep, creates a dramatic tension that Testa rendered with pictorial mastery. Dear visitor, I now invite you to continue your visit by heading towards the right side aisle. This nave, covered by a continuous barrel vault, punctuated by five transverse arches, is a true book of Christ's public life, painted with mastery and devotion. These paintings, signed at the bottom right by Tomaselli, are also datable to the first quarter of the 20th century. The first fresco of the vault, located in correspondence with the baptistery chapel, represents the temptations of Christ in the desert. Christ is depicted in solitude, surrounded by the desolation of the desert landscape, with two devils dressed as angels, whom the angels observing the scene from above, painted with ethereal and delicate tones, emphasize the divine intervention of the Holy Spirit, characterized by the presence of the dove in this fundamental moment in the history of salvation. At the center of the chapel stands the baptismal font, made of red Verona marble. The octagonal shape of the font's cover is not accidental. The octagon, in Christian symbolism, represents resurrection, new life, the eighth day of creation that begins with baptism. The chapel of the baptistery reminds you that Christian life is a journey that begins with water and the Spirit, that continues with the Eucharist and confirmation, that is nourished by the Word of God and the sacraments, that finds its fulfillment in the beatific vision. Take with you the memory of this holy place. Every time you see a baptism, remember that you are witnessing the greatest miracle, the birth of a child of God. Every time you hear water flowing, remember that Christ has washed you in His blood and made you pure as snow. This chapel is the starting point of your pilgrimage in the Mother Church of Carini, just as baptism is the starting point of your pilgrimage towards eternity. It is the place where everything begins, where God's grace first touches your life, where you become part of the great family of believers. Continuing the second panel of the vault presents the miraculous catch on the Sea of Tiberias. On the shore, the fishermen overturn the net overflowing with fish and eels, while Jesus, on the left, absorbed, points to the prodigy. Dear visitor, continuing our journey along the right side aisle, I now invite you to pause in the second bay, where the chapel of St. Sebastian opens, a place that, despite its apparent simplicity, contains centuries of devotion and art. The architectural layout presents itself as a rectangular niche, gracefully set between two fluted pilasters, culminating in a lowered barrel vault with lateral lunettes. The frames, strips, and architectural moldings faithfully follow the late 18th century scheme of the entire cathedral. A white background, ochre gold filigree, and small stucco applications, such as leaf pendants and rosettes, which add a touch of delicate elegance. At the center of this chapel, although now hung without the original altar, we admire a large altarpiece, an oil on canvas dating back to the late 18th or early 19th century, a work of the Palermitan school. At the top, the Virgin with the scepter dominates the scene, surrounded by numerous Dominican and Carmelite saints, testimony to the richness of Christian holiness and the intercession that unites heaven and earth. Among these, you can recognize a bishop with a mitre, perhaps Saint Albert, and two contemplative saints representing female religious life. The pyramidal setting and muted colors suggest the hand of an epigone of Francesco Sozzi, an artist who was able to infuse deep spirituality into this work. Next to the altarpiece stands the wooden statue of Saint Sebastian, about 120 centimeters high and dating back to the 18th century, a work with strong expressive intensity. The martyr is tied to a tree trunk, with his flexible body wrapped in a brown gold loincloth that emphasizes both his human vulnerability and his spiritual dignity. The pulsating drops of blood on his chest and legs exalt the saint's sacrifice. His head is turned in ecstasy upwards, a typical Baroque pathos that expresses his deep faith even at the moment of martyrdom. The Lord's group, with the Immaculate Virgin and Saint Bernadette kneeling, made of resin and 120 centimeters high, testifies to the continuity of Marian devotion and the importance of apparitions in modern spirituality. These works are here for popular piety practices, offering a place of personal prayer for the intercession of the saints closest to contemporary sensibility. Proceeding further, the third fresco of the vault tells the mystery of the resurrection of Lazarus. At the mouth of the cave, Martha and Mary witness their friend emerging wrapped in linens. Jesus, with outstretched arm and white-pink robe, dominates the scene while the crowd recoils in amazement before the miracle of life conquering death. Above the architrave of the southern door leading into the external loggia, set in a frame of 18th-century white gold stuccos with volutes and a crowning shell, there is a canvas of extraordinary beauty that serves as a true theological overdoor. At the top of the composition, the Immaculate Virgin sits on white clouds, dressed in an ivory tunic and a blue-green mantle. Her hands crossed on her chest recall the dogma of the Immaculate Conception, while her gaze turned upwards expresses deep devotion and contemplation. Behind the Virgin, St. Joseph is recognizable by the lily that a small angel offers him, a symbol of his purity and his role as guardian of the Holy Family. At the center of a golden halo, the dove of the Holy Spirit symbolizes the divine presence that illuminates and sanctifies the entire composition. A choir of cherubic heads forms a luminous cloud beneath Mary's feet, ideally connecting heaven and earth. On the left, St. Paul is represented as a young man with a naked sword and an open gospel, symbols of his martyrdom and his preaching. On the right, St. Blaise is recognizable by his mitre, embroidered cope, and crozier. The saint points to the Virgin with his right hand, inviting the faithful who cross the threshold to devotion. Opposite the side door, leaning against the columns, are two authentic jewels of Sicilian Renaissance art, the marble holy water fonts that testify to the presence in Sicily of the famous Gagini family. The first holy water font on the left is a masterpiece from 1496, the oldest artifact preserved in this church. The engraved date places it in the heart of the early Sicilian Renaissance, when the celebrated Domenico Gagini and his renowned workshop were already active in Palermo. Observe the base, a quadrangular block finely finished with leaves, a vegetal motif that immediately reveals the hand of the Gagini school. On the lower edge, smooth ferrules serve as an octagonal base for the column, replacing the Gothic pedestals with a more classical lexicon, a sign of the artistic renewal that was transforming Sicilian art. The shaft is a slender column turned like a palm trunk, with the marble delicately engraved with fern fronds and clusters of berries rising upwards. This shape is not accidental. It refers to the lignum vitae, the tree of life. The basin features a smooth band with graffito volutes, but the true charm lies in the angel heads that emerge as corbels between deep petal-shaped ribs. On the sides, the coats of arms with the crenellated castle stand out, testifying to the patronage of the La Grua Talamanca family. The second holy water font opposite was made by Antonino Gagini in 1543. This work represents the stylistic evolution of the Gagini workshop towards full Renaissance maturity. The base presents itself as a truncated pyramid block with four powerful lion feet emerging in the round from the corners. Each side features a heraldic shield framed by ribbon flourishes. Two still clearly bear the two-towered crenellated castle of the La Grua Talamanca, testimony to the feudal patronage. The shaft is a tapered baluster composed of two elements, a central double-handled vase with a very light high-relief winged puto head, and below a frieze with opposing C-shaped volutes. The small puto acts as a genius aquae, personifying the purity of the sacramental. The basin, with its hemispherical and smooth profile, represents a more sober choice compared to the first holy water font, in line with Antonino Gagini's mature phase, who preferred smooth surfaces to enhance the luster of white ivory marble. Looking up again, the fourth fresco of the vault depicts Christ's encounter with the Samaritan woman at the well, Jesus seated on the edge in a purple cloak and ivory tunic, dialogues with the woman, who in a blue dress and turban holds a terracotta amphora ready to fill with water. The stone arch and thin branches in the background frame the scene, transforming the daily act of drawing water into a symbol of the living water announced by the Savior. Dear visitor, I now invite you to pause before the Chapel of St. Vitus, located in the third bay of the right side aisle. The layout of this chapel features a rectangular bay, skillfully set into the wall thickness, which rises slightly above the floor of the main nave. The walls are marked by thin, brown, oxidized tempera frames, a play of lines and colors that echoes the elegant geometric scheme of the counter facade. In the corners, gilded pressed plaster festoons gracefully descend, that recurring motif that, like a golden thread, crosses and unites the entire cathedral. Above the altar, the canvas of the Madonna Liberatrice degli Infermi, Madonna Liberator of the Sick, a work by the master Filippo Tancredi. This oil on canvas is framed by a very rich, ebonized wooden frame with a cymatium and corner pieces, with gilded acanthus leaves. At the top center, the Virgin seated on a throne of clouds offers the child with a blessing gesture. Below her, an angel points to a young sick person lying on a bed, while two saints intercede, probably Saint Roch, recognizable by his green-brown cloak, and Saint Sebastian, or Pellegrino Laziosi. Winged putti and rose garlands close the scene, creating an atmosphere of grace and hope. At the center of the chapel is the wooden statue of Saint Vitus Martyr, a work of great value, made of carved and polychrome poplar wood. With gilded applications, this sculpture is an eloquent example of the skill of Sicilian woodcarvers between the late 17th and early 18th centuries. The young saint is depicted in Renaissance attire, with a gilded lorica and a red cloak. He holds the gospel to his chest and at his feet. Two small dogs recall the legend that he was saved by dogs during his martyrdom. The statue was moved to this chapel from the nearby church dedicated to the city's patron saint, now the seat of the Cathedral Museum. Now looking again towards the vault of the nave, the pictorial cycle concludes with Jesus calming the storm. Tossed boats, rowers struggling with the waves create an atmosphere of danger and fear. In the center, Christ standing with his arm raised and his red cloak billowing in the wind, while the wave breaks against the bow in the foreground, demonstrates his divine authority over natural elements. The last chapel of the right nave is dedicated to Saint Lucy. The architecture of this chapel follows the scheme of the other side chapels. A rectangular niche set between pilasters, with a lowered barrel vault and lateral lunettes. The white walls, marked by brown, oxidized frames, create a secluded environment that favors personal prayer and intimacy with the venerated saints. At the center of the chapel stands the wooden statue of Saint Lucy, the young martyr from Syracuse, venerated as the protector of sight. The saint is represented according to traditional iconography, young, elegantly dressed, holding a plate containing her eyes, a symbol of her martyrdom and patronage. The saint's finely decorated dress recalls her patrician origin. At the base of the altar, in a position of particular veneration, a reliquary urn containing the remains of a martyr from the Roman catacombs is preserved. This relic, which arrived in Carni through the channels of ancient devotion, represents a direct link with the early church, with those Christians who sealed their faith in Christ with their blood. On the sides of the statue are placed the metal ex voto paintings, eyes, hands, hearts, typical of Sicilian popular religiosity. Each ex voto tells a story, a healed eye, a restored hand, a comforted heart. On the side walls of the chapel, some canvases from different periods complete the devotional furnishings. To the right of the altar stands a neoclassical marble sippus, the Carollo funerary monument, dating back to around 1850. This monument, in its sober elegance, bears a Latin inscription dedicated to Di Salvatore Carollo, a local archpriest, a tribute to his life and ministry. On the left, the canvas depicting the Madonna of the Rosary. Dear visitor, I invite you to proceed towards the right side transept, where a space of extraordinary beauty and theological depth opens. The Chapel of the Blessed Sacrament. The environment presents itself as a single majestic bay, surmounted by a lunetted barrel vault that gracefully rises upwards. The entire space is skillfully framed by a continuous neoclassical entablature, an uninterrupted frieze that marks its linearity and elegance. The entablature is rhythmically interrupted by fluted pilasters, flat columns leaning against the wall, whose surfaces are finely engraved with vertical fluting. They culminate in gilded Corinthian capitals, a triumph of acanthus leaves and volutes that, embellished with gold, capture the light and add a touch of sumptuousness to the whole. To delimit the presbytery, a high and imposing polychrome marble balustrade rises. At the center of the presbytery, the focal point of devotion, stands the Eucharistic altar. Its table and frontal are a masterpiece of inlay and mixed marbles, where different varieties of marble merge in a harmony of colors and veins. At the center of the frontal, a gilded central medallion stands out, attracting the eye and emphasizing the sacredness of the place. Above the table rises the Tempietto Tabernacle, dating back to the 19th century. Made of veined gray marble with its natural streaks that give it a dynamic appearance, it is embellished with red columns that enhance its structure. The whole is surmounted by a serpentine green dome, a small dome with an intense hue that adds refinement. In the background, a grand gilded wooden halo unfolds, a work from the mid-18th century. From this halo, a symbol of divine light, 8 stucco putti emerge, angelic figures that with their soft and dynamic forms converge towards the central monstrance, now protected by a veil to preserve its integrity. The back wall is enriched by a plastic decoration of considerable value. Within a broken pediment, a pair of putti stand out, angelic figures that with their grace animate the space. The entire work, made of white stucco and gilding, is the result of local late 18th century craftsmanship, testimony to the artisanal skill of the era, and the ability to create beauty in the service of faith. Looking up at the vault, a painted sky of profound theological meanings is revealed. In the central oval medallion, an ethereal and graceful female figure, wrapped in a dress with delicate blue-pink shades, holds a chalice and a radiant host. It is the allegory of the Eucharist. The lunettes are decorated with scenes that conceal profound theological meanings related to the Eucharist. In the first, putti harvesting grapes are observed, an image that evokes the reference to the blood of Christ, a symbol of the Eucharist. In the second, putti with ears of wheat allude. The environment presents itself as a single, majestic bay, surmounted by a lunetted barrel vault that gracefully rises upwards. The entire space is skillfully framed by a continuous neoclassical entablature, an uninterrupted frieze that marks its linearity and elegance. The entablature is rhythmically interrupted by fluted pilasters, flat columns leaning against the wall, whose surfaces are finely engraved with vertical fluting. They culminate in gilded Corinthian capitals, a triumph of acanthus leaves and volutes that, embellished with gold, capture the light and add a touch of sumptuousness to the whole. To delimit the presbytery, a high and imposing polychrome marble balustrade rises. At the center of the presbytery, the focal point of devotion, stands the Eucharistic altar. Its table and frontal are a masterpiece of inlay and mixed marbles, where different varieties of marble merge in a harmony of colors and veins. At the center of the frontal, a gilded central medallion stands out, attracting the eye and emphasizing the sacredness of the place. Above the table rises the Tempietto Tabernacle, dating back to the 19th century. Made of veined gray marble, with its natural streaks that give it a dynamic appearance, it is embellished with red columns that enhance its structure. The whole is surmounted by a serpentine green dome, a small dome with an intense hue that adds refinement. In the background, a grand gilded wooden halo unfolds, a work from the mid-18th century. From this halo, a symbol of divine light, 8 stucco putti emerge, angelic figures that with their soft and dynamic forms converge towards the central monstrance, now protected by a veil to preserve its integrity. The back wall is enriched by a plastic decoration of considerable value. Within a broken pediment, a pair of putti stand out, angelic figures that with their grace animate the space. The entire work, made of white stucco and gilding, is the result of local late 18th century craftsmanship, testimony to the artisanal skill of the era and the ability to create beauty in the service of faith. Looking up at the vault, a painted sky of profound theological meanings is revealed. In the central oval medallion, an ethereal and graceful female figure wrapped in a dress with delicate blue-pink shades holds a chalice and a radiant host. It is the allegory of the Eucharist. The lunettes are decorated with scenes that conceal profound theological meanings related to the Eucharist. In the first, Pudi harvesting grapes are observed, an image that evokes the reference to the blood of Christ, a symbol of the Eucharist. In the second, Putti, with ears of wheat, allude to the Eucharistic bread, thus completing the iconographic cycle of the Eucharistic celebration. The side walls of the nave are embellished with wall frescoes that narrate biblical episodes related to the theme of the Eucharist. On the left wall, you can admire the fresco of the multiplication of the loaves and fishes, a work by Giuseppe Santangelo created in 1930. The scene captures the moment when Christ blesses the crowd, while a young man, with a gesture of humility and offering, presents the loaves and fishes, a prefiguration of the Eucharistic gift. On the right wall is the fresco of the prophet Elijah comforted by the angel, a biblical episode from the first book of Kings. The angel, a divine messenger, offers bread and a jug to the sleeping prophet, a typology of the Eucharist that emphasizes the spiritual nourishment offered by God. Both paintings are enclosed in large, round arches, enriched with stucco cherub heads and gilded laurel leaves. Dear visitor, we conclude our extraordinary journey through the wonders of the Mother Church of Carini with the contemplation of a space of exceptional, devotional, and artistic intensity, the Chapel of the Most Holy Crucifix. This environment reveals itself as a true Baroque theater of the Passion, skillfully embedded in the masonry of the nave, where every detail contributes to creating a visual and spiritual experience of profound resonance. This chapel presents itself as an aedicule of extraordinary elegance, delineated by fluted pilasters that rise gracefully, culminating in gilded capitals that reflect the light, adding splendor to the ensemble. Above, a stucco cartouche bears the IHS monogram, a Christological symbol that elevates the gaze towards the sacred. The entrance to the chapel is magnificently framed by a triumphal arch, embellished with a continuous gilding motif that emphasizes its solemnity. Above this arch, a very elegant scallop shell with sinuous and delicate forms is supported by putti, who seem to float in the air with angelic grace. This composition culminates in the Johannine motto in polychrome stucco, Si quid petieritis patri, nomine meo dabit vobis. If you ask the Father anything in my name, he will give it to you. At the center of this sacred space, protected by a crystal that preserves its integrity, stands with imposing presence the wooden simulacrum of the crucified Christ, a work dating back to the late 16th century. The body of Christ, sculpted with mastery that enhances its tension and vibrant suffering, is nailed to a cross of mottled agate stone, an element of extraordinary uniqueness in Sicily. This cross also serves as a reliquary behind it, preserving precious memories of the Passion within. On the sides of the crucifix, on elegant pedestals, stand two stucco angels attributed to Procopio Serpata, created around 1720. These angelic figures, animated by an ascending vortex that enhances their movement and dramatic intensity, wield the lances of the Passion, instruments of martyrdom that here take on a meaning of profound devotion. To the right of the altar, inside a niche protected by glass, is preserved an object of inestimable historical and spiritual value. The magnificent processional throne in gilded bronze, embellished with columns of lumicella, a brocatel marble with suggestive veins. Under the small domed edicle of this throne stands the reliquary of the thorn, a fragment from the crown of Christ, a gift of extraordinary importance received in 1525 from Baroness Eleonora Tocco Manriquez. Four cherubs support the cylindrical reliquary that encloses the relic, while a chiseled silver nimbus amplifies the preciousness of this ex voto. The chapel is enriched by a pictorial cycle of notable artistic and spiritual relevance. To the left of the crucifix, a slate by Zoppo de Ganghi, dating back to the early 17th century, presents an oil on slate depicting the crucifix between St. Francis and St. Onufrius. The Caravaggesque penumbra that envelops the scene accentuates the intimacy of the mystical dialogue between the figures. On the sides of the triumphal arch, two large oval canvases by Vito di Anna, created between 1729 and 1769. The first, La Dolorata, Our Lady of Sorrows, depicts the Virgin in a dark habit and a cobalt blue mantle, holding her pierced heart, a symbol of her immense sorrow. The deep reds of the drapery recall the redemptive blood. The second canvas, La Veronica, shows the saint spreading the sudarium with the Imago Christi, while two putti roll up a cartouche with the inscription, In Rye. Above the side doors, two gold-backed ovals bear Latin inscriptions that reveal historical and devotional aspects of the chapel. On the left side, the text, AMDG, Populi, Sacellum hoc noviter comptum in peculiarum monumentum pietatis dispositum fuit, translates to a dedication, Ad Majorem Dei Gloriam. This chapel of the people, recently embellished, has been prepared as a special monument of piety. On the right side, the inscription, Sub auspicis Vincenti Thurn la Grua Talamanca Rectoribus. Don Pedro Randazzo y Aloisio Sarmiento, Anno millesimo septingentesimo, quadragesimo sexto, recalls the patronage of Prince Vincenzo IV, La Grua Talamanca and the Rectors, in the year 1746. With this chapel, your extraordinary journey through the Mother Church of Carini concludes. You have contemplated centuries of art and faith. You have met saints and artists. You have breathed the spirituality of a community that has been able to transform stone into prayer. To the Eucharistic bread, thus completing the iconographic cycle of the Eucharistic celebration. The side walls of the nave are embellished with wall frescoes that narrate biblical episodes related to the theme of the Eucharist. On the left wall, you can admire the fresco of The Multiplication of the Loaves and Fishes, a work by Giuseppe Sant'Angelo created in 1930. The scene captures the moment when Christ blesses the crowd while a young man, with a gesture of humility and offering, presents the loaves and fishes, a prefiguration of the Eucharistic gift. On the right wall is the fresco of the prophet Elijah comforted by the angel, a biblical episode from the first book of Kings. The angel, a divine messenger, offers bread and a jug to the sleeping prophet, a typology of the Eucharist that emphasizes the spiritual nourishment offered by God. Both paintings are enclosed in large, round arches, enriched with stucco cherub heads and gilded laurel leaves. Dear visitor, we conclude our extraordinary journey through Taoism. Dear visitor, we conclude our extraordinary journey through the wonders of the Mother Church of Carini with the contemplation of a space of exceptional devotional and artistic intensity, the Chapel of the Most Holy Crucifix. This environment reveals itself as a true Baroque theater of the Passion, skillfully embedded in the masonry of the nave, where every detail contributes to creating a visual and spiritual experience of profound resonance. This chapel presents itself as an edicule of extraordinary elegance delineated by fluted pilasters that rise gracefully, culminating in gilded capitals that reflect the light, adding splendor to the ensemble. Above, a stucco cartouche bears the IHS monogram, a Christological symbol that elevates the gaze towards the sacred. The entrance to the chapel is magnificently framed by a triumphal arch, embellished with a continuous gilding motif that emphasizes its solemnity. Above this arch, a very elegant scallop shell, with sinuous and delicate forms, is supported by putti, who seem to float in the air with angelic grace. This composition culminates in the Johannine motto in polychrome stucco, Si quid petiritis patri, Nomine meo dabit vobis. If you ask the Father anything in my name, he will give it to you. At the center of this sacred space, protected by a crystal that preserves its integrity, stands with imposing presence the wooden simulacrum of the crucified Christ, a work dating back to the late 16th century. The body of Christ, sculpted with mastery that enhances its tension and vibrant suffering, is nailed to a cross of mottled agate stone, an element of extraordinary uniqueness in Sicily. This cross also serves as a reliquary behind it, preserving precious memories of the passion within. On the sides of the crucifix, on elegant pedestals, stand two stucco angels attributed to Procopio Serpata, created around 1720. These angelic figures, animated by an ascending vortex that enhances their movement and dramatic intensity, wield the lances of the Passion, instruments of martyrdom that here take on a meaning of profound devotion. To the right of the altar, inside a niche protected by glass, is preserved an object of inestimable historical and spiritual value, the magnificent processional throne in gilded bronze, embellished with columns of lumicella, a brocatel marble with suggestive veins. Under the small domed edicule of this throne stands the reliquary of the thorn, a fragment from the crown of Christ, a gift of extraordinary importance received in 1525 from Baroness Eleonora Tocco Manriquez. Four cherubs support the cylindrical reliquary that encloses the relic, while a chiseled silver nimbus amplifies the preciousness of this ex voto. The chapel is enriched by a pictorial cycle of notable artistic and spiritual relevance. To the left of the crucifix, a slate by Zoppo di Ganghi, dating back to the early 17th century, presents an oil on slate depicting the crucifix between St. Francis and St. Onufrius. The Caravaggesque penumbra that envelops the scene accentuates the intimacy of the mystical dialogue between the figures. On the sides of the triumphal arch, two large oval canvases by Vito Dana, created between 1729 and 1769. The first, La Dolorata, Our Lady of Sorrows, depicts the Virgin in a dark habit and a cobalt blue mantle, holding her pierced heart, a symbol of her immense sorrow. The deep reds of the drapery recall the redemptive blood. The second canvas, La Veronica, shows the saint spreading the sudarium with the Imago Christi, while two putti roll up a cartouche with the inscription, In Our Eye. Above the side doors, two gold-backed ovals bear Latin inscriptions that reveal historical and devotional aspects of the chapel. On the left side, the text, AMDG, Populi, Sacellum, Hoc, Noviter, Comptum, In Peculiarem, Monumentum, Pietatis, Dispositum, Fuit, translates to a dedication, Ad Majorem Dei Gloriam. This chapel of the people, recently embellished, has been prepared as a special monument of piety. On the right side, the inscription, Sub Auspices Vincenti Terti, La Grua Talamanca, Rectoribus, Don Pedro Randazzo, y Aloisio Sarmiento, Anno Millesimo, Septingentissimo, Quadragesimo Sexto, recalls the patronage of Prince Vincenzo IV, La Grua Talamanca, and the rectors in the year 1746. With this chapel, your extraordinary journey through the Mother Church of Carini concludes. You have contemplated centuries of art and faith. You have met saints and artists. You have breathed the spirituality of a community that has been able to transform stone into prayer. Dear visitor, we thank you for visiting this place and invite you to continue your journey to discover the history and architecture of the city of Carini.